Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia Exceed plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RTE.ie coming back because people want to come back to this story yesterday of this doctor. A year after the pandemic began, we rang the IMO, the Irish College of General Practitioners, and the HSE to say, were they aware of any doctor that would not administer the vaccine? And they said they weren't aware of any doctor. Well, we've discovered not only with Dr. Waters and apparently a couple of others around the country, not only will they not administer the vaccine, he admitted openly that he would not refer anyone for a COVID test. And as you know, COVID tests have been going on now for 11 months. So how did this doctor proceed not to refer anybody for a COVID test, and nobody knew about it, apart from his patients, of course, and that's who contacted us. And then as a follow-up to what Dr. Waters said yesterday, he's a conscientious objector, will not be administering the vaccines, not stand in the way of his patients getting the vaccine elsewhere. By the way, we were clearly from our patients, the patients who contacted us, he did not offer any other name, address or postcode for people to go and get the vaccine somewhere else. He said it's up to the HSE to sort out vaccines for his patients. He tells patients he wouldn't do put anything in their arms that he wouldn't put in his own. Disagrees with how the COVID virus has been handled and says he does not refer his patients for COVID tests. There's a follow-up article in the Irish Daily Mail today by Ian Begley, and Ian Begley quotes Dr. Waters as saying, if anyone is stupid enough to get the vaccine, they're entitled to it. Maureen Lawler, Maureen, you're the one who revealed all this yesterday. I mean, for someone to say if any of his clients... Any of his patients are stupid enough. What is the reaction of his patients after yesterday's revelation by yourself and his response?
Well, they're all quite shocked. Because we are isolating here in our own apartments at the moment, we haven't been able to have a proper meeting. But I know from those that I have heard who have knocked at my door, they were totally shocked, and they were equally shocked that, and I didn't know this, none of us knew that he wasn't doing the COVID tests. Because fortunately for us, or the people that are registered with Dr. Waters, they didn't actually have to ring and make an appointment.
As far as you're speaking for a number of patients, but you're not speaking for his whole list.
No. Just a few. But... I think that a couple of them I know are interested in moving on, but unfortunately in this pandemic...
You will not get another GP. How will you get another GP?
That's what I mean. I have discussed it with a couple of them yesterday.
But Maureen, the thing I'm interested in now is, when did you find out that this doctor... obviously the vaccine was the revelation.
Yes.
But when did you find out that this doctor was refusing to refer his patients for COVID tests?
It according was on Monday to himself. When an elderly couple went to him for some other problem. But they asked him, when would they come to him next week for the vaccination? And he said, oh no, he said, I'm not doing the vaccination. And they said, why? And he said, well, as you've quoted, I wouldn't put in a patient's arm what I wouldn't put in my own. I'm against it. I don't believe in the vaccination.
You see, I'm reading from the Guide to Professional Conduct and Ethics for Registered Medical Practitioners. And it says, there is a section, believe it or not, on conscientious objection. As a doctor, you must not allow your personal moral standards to influence your treatment of patients. If you have a conscientious objection to a course of action, you should explain this to the patient and make the names of other doctors available to them. Dr. Waters, from what we understand, including his own conversation, was refusing, but he wasn't making the names of other doctors available. And the conscientious objection does not absolve you from responsibility to a patient in emergency circumstances. Refusal to treat, from the Guide to Professional Conduct and Ethics for Registered Medical Practitioners. I'm just baffled. This has been going on nearly a year. Nobody has spoken about it.
No, nobody.
And the three IMO And they're a union. I don't see what responsibility they have, or the Irish College of General Practitioners. They're a union, so don't respond. But the HSE say they never heard of this. They never heard of anybody refusing to refer anyone for a COVID test. But again, back to the ethics. It's in exceptional circumstances, you may need to consider refusing specific treatments to individual patients. This must never be done on the basis of personal discrimination. You might consider refusing specific treatments because, for example, you consider that the treatment would not work or that it might cause more harm than good.
Yes.
That's you might also consider refusing treatment where you believe your patient is unlikely to cooperate. That's understandable. Or make the lifestyle changes required to make the treatment effective. If you decide to refuse treatment, you must explain your reasons to the patient and offer them an opportunity to review their decision and or seek another opinion. Now, that wasn't done, as far as we know.
Not at all. And that's first-hand information. I've spoken to these people personally. They're friends of mine. And they repeated exactly what he said to them. And when they realised they weren't going to get the vaccination next week, they did inquire, well, where will we go? And he didn't refer them anywhere. All he said was, I'm sorry, he said, you have to find that out yourself. I don't know.
Okay, now the other thing as well is the HSE ads. I'm sure there'll be one during this programme. The HSE ads say, you will be contacted for the vaccine. You will be contacted by your GP.
That's correct.
Now, everyone has one GP and one GP alone.
Yes.
Yet this doctor is not going to contact anybody.
No.
But the HSE were completely unaware of this. And then as an addendum to that ad, they say, remember, for any issues, you can always ring the HSE helpline. Now, your friends did.
They did ring. They rang on Monday when they came home. And as I explained, the lady that was looking after them, she was quite shocked because she hadn't heard anything like this, that a doctor would refuse to give you a vaccination. So she was going to go off and ask her supervisor, and she was coming back to this couple. Now, as of today, I've spoken to the lady this morning. Mm-hmm. She said nobody has come back, but she was going to try again to get through to the HSE because her husband is coming up to 90 in May, and she herself is 86. They're very anxious to get the vaccination, and now
fairness,
they're in limbo.
Paul Reid, when this was put to him at the press conference yesterday afternoon, the CEO of the HSE, he said he was absolutely shocked.
Yes, I heard that, on the 6 o'clock news.
Paul is shocked. But why is the HSE surprised? He's been doing this for a year nearly. Dr. Deirdre Ford. Deirdre, good afternoon. I know you want to talk, rightly so, about the position in Naas Hospital and how you're involved in the rollout for a new vaccine for swine flu. But have you an opinion on, one, the code of ethics as it applies to Dr. Waters, and why other doctors have been so quiet about him?
Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for having me on. So, firstly, just in relation to, when I was involved in rolling out a new vaccine program, that was the swine flu back in 2012. And I would have been very much involved in educating, basically patients, educating hospital staff, all of that kind of thing, to get them to uptake the vaccine. And when we started rolling out that particular one in Naas Hospital, I myself was the very first one to get the vaccine. I got one of the nurses to do it so that I could lead by example and say, look, this was safe and I had no issue getting this. Now, coming back, Joe, to conscientious objection and all of that kind of thing, if you look through the medical council guidelines, the ethical guidelines, they're quite clear. And one of the part of it here says that if you have conscientious objection to a treatment or a form of care, you should inform your patient, colleague, and where relevant, your employer as soon as possible. Now, I would see that to mean that his employer there would be
because the HSE,
a contract. Yes, he contract of employment for vaccination of patients, And he should have informed the HSC from the outset that he was not prepared to do this. So that at least the HSC would have been in a position to inform other GPs or get the whole thing up and running for when the vaccine was available to them.
Okay. Now, is one of the problems, Deirdre, and I know this is changing, but that doctors in Irish society had a position through education, and a lot of education and exams involved in being a doctor, of being very powerful and being held, rightly so in many cases, in high esteem, and people were afraid of their GP.
Unfortunately, yes, there seems to be that mentality, especially among the older patients. You know, we're talking about people in their, you know, late 70s, 80s, because GPs, I suppose, were very much held in high esteem, like the parish priest, mm-hmm. and they didn't want to actually upset them, and their own children themselves would have gone to that same GP. Okay. So there is always this complete and utter trust that your GP was going to look after you and look after your care to the best of their ability.
But the fact is that this man, this doctor, is saying, and I believe, well, it's self-evident in fairness to medics. Medics do at least 7 years. They do exams that they have to pass,
yes.
both practical
yes.
and theoretical. They have to pass the exams, over hard exams over a seven-year period. We have a lot of confidence that when someone is a doctor, we know they have certain qualifications, high qualifications, as in the Irish case. When someone is a parish priest, we've no, I mean, this is with every due respect to a parish priest, we've no evidence that they are of a superior intellect or whatever, or superior knowledge to the rest of us. So doctors do hold a very, not just a powerful position, but a pivotal position, because they have the power over us in terms of our health. Now, insofar as you can answer this, Deirdre, are you surprised, is probably the best way of putting it, that for 11 months, it seems, this doctor is saying, I will not refer anyone for a COVID test?
I am absolutely shocked, to be quite honest. I couldn't believe it when I heard it yesterday, that there was somebody, a doctor out there, who was actually refusing to refer people for COVID testing and refusing to vaccinate them. And Joe, I'm actually going to bring this up too. I looked at the Hippocratic Oath again, looking at mm-hmm. the classic version and of the modern version of it. And there are two bits that I want to pick out. So one says, I will prevent disease whenever I can, for prevention is preferable to cure. Okay, so that is part of his Hippocratic Oath. And vaccine is going to prevent any COVID infections in this country. And the other one, and it doesn't really pertain to him at this stage, but the other one says, I will not be ashamed to say, I know not, nor will I fail to call in my colleagues when the skills of another are needed for a patient's recovery. Okay, there. Very straightforward things in the Hippocratic
okay.
Oath, which he would have taken.
But Maureen,
Joe, could I just say
yes,
something here
yes.
that I brought up yesterday as well, that what would worry me too with older people is they do what you were talking about. They rely on their GP and they believe in them and they trust them. And if the GP is saying, I'm not going to take the vaccine, I don't believe in it, there is a possibility that they would change their mind and go home and decide that if their GP wasn't mm-hmm. going to take it, well, neither were they, and that could cause more problems.
Yeah, good point. Dr. Mark.
I agree yeah. totally that, yes, but there's that fear factor then. If a GP turns around and says, well, I'm not going to get it, so that's not even leading by example. It's not giving any faith and trust in that doctor. Whatever about his own personal preferences are in relation to getting the vaccine, it is not his responsibility to, I suppose, influence his own personal decision and basically give wrong
information
to his
yes.
own patients.
Yes. Incorrect.
Yes, which is very, very, this is very, very serious, I have to say.
Hmm.
I agree with that.
I'll come back to the whole issue of vaccines, which is where this began, Deirdre, in a sec, but I want to bring in Dr. Mark Rowe, who's in Waterford, 1857 15 815 joe@rt.ie. Mark, I don't want to drag everyone into this debate, but you are a GP, and the same questions to you. Were you aware of doctors refusing to refer, a doctor in our, we've two yesterday, refusing to refer people for, first of all, a COVID test, and then refusing to administer the vaccine without any alternative being offered?
Well, indeed I wasn't, Joe, and, you know, when your researcher spoke to me this morning, she asked me, you know, how did I feel hearing that news, and I had a pit in my stomach, Joe, hearing it, and I had a profound sense of sadness that any GP would, you know, deny basic investigations to a patient. But I have to say, you know, in Ireland there are several thousand GPs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it covers the A to Z of all personality types,
mm-hmm.
And everybody is entitled to their own opinion on things. But
they're not, Mark.
We have a national.
When it comes to medicine and when it comes to science, they're not.
No.
I'm not being. It's not a political party.
No.
That's what I'm saying. You are seriously qualified, educated, examined, validated individuals.
Absolutely, and like we're dealing with it. This isn't about GPs, or this isn't about any one sector of the health service. It's about everybody working together. We have a global pandemic situation. The public health experts are the experts in public health, and as GPs, we are facilitating the expert public health advice, which is to deliver vaccination on the ground, initially to the most at-risk groups, which is the, you know, over 70s, starting with the over 85s. And, you know, it is the most basic thing we do in medicine, which is prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could just remind your listeners, Joe, how far we have come. I mean, you know, until 1980, smallpox was still a real disease on this planet. And, you know, 30% of people that got smallpox died from it. Many of those who survived were left with significant illness and scars. And it's only thanks to the brilliance, really, of vaccination, which came in, you know, in the late 1700s, that we've been able to eradicate smallpox.
And, Mark, in my lifetime, I suspect you're younger than I, but in my lifetime, polio. I remember in Ballyfermot, young boys going round with dead legs, to use that awful phrase, in calipers, a leg that never would grow. They'd be going around on those awful wooden crutches because of polio. And how did we get rid of polio? A vaccination.
Joe, my auntie Patsy from County Clare, she had polio and she walked with a lameness all her life. Listen, as medical students, we were in Temple Street in Crumlin. When you've been a medical student, Joe, when you've seen poor children who got complications of measles and they're left brain damaged for life, or you see children who end up deaf from mumps, or you see children who are struck down with congenital rubella syndrome and left with devastating lifelong disabilities. When you see that, Joe, as a medical student, and then you become a doctor, you really understand in your heart how important vaccination is in terms of prevention, in terms of helping to keep people well. And, you know, I would say for the vast, vast, vast majority of GPs, and there was, I think, 3,000 on our webinar there on Tuesday night, facilitated by the IMO, for the vast, vast majority, this is a core value. It's beyond something that you're asked to do. It's something that it epitomizes who we are as family doctors in terms of helping to keep people well and prevent the devastating consequences of illness. And this is the thing about COVID. COVID is a scary virus. Mm. It's so random in how it hits, and people can be devastated by COVID and the long COVID consequences. We're still only beginning to understand what that is. So that's what I want to say to you, Joe. This is a core value for I would say almost all of my colleagues.
And Joe, back in March, before the first lockdown, I got COVID before there was any such thing as hand sanitizers or anything like that.
Okay.
And I would still be suffering some of the lingering fatigue from that COVID instant. And just saying what Mark was saying there in terms of infectious diseases and that, I used to work in public health. I was a public health doctor for a while. And I remember going out doing contact tracing for meningococcal meningitis and meningococcal septicemia, where it was a devastating illness for young children and especially teenagers. And the amount of children, teenagers, who lost limbs because they had to have amputations from meningococcal septicemia. And thankfully now we managed to get vaccines against that. So we've got meningitis B vaccine and Men C. It is so, so important that that people are aware that this is the main way that we can prevent these devastating diseases in our time at the moment. And apart from COVID, I have no doubt when we get on top of COVID that there's going to be another one. Some other virus is going to raise its ugly head, and we're going to end up in some sort of another pandemic in the future.
But Dr. Waters also, he told us yesterday, but I'll just give it because it's succinctly put by him. It's in quotes in today's Mail by Ian Begley, and he says, I know the medical council are investigating me with a view to striking me off. And he said, if they do, I will take them to court. I will take the medical council to court if I have to. But have people lost sight of the fact that over 1,000 people died in January? And at the height of all our previous, I know we have to go back centuries in terms of fatalities and 100 years in terms of the Spanish flu, but there's been nothing like this in our lifetime. So I don't know anyone is so blasé about it. I wouldn't put that, even the phrase, sure, I wouldn't put anything into my arm, into your arm, I wouldn't put into my arm. And if anyone is stupid enough to get the vaccine, they're entitled to get it. This is what this doctor said.
Yeah, well,
and 1,000 people, February the 2nd, 101 people died.
Can I just say, look, that the HSE has the lists of where all the over 70s are. So, you know, basically almost everyone in Ireland over 70 has a medical card or a doctor visit card. So the HSE have these lists. So I want people that are listeners to really appreciate nobody is going to be disadvantaged. Nobody will be left out. And, you know, this is something that is for everybody that wants to have it. And we hope people will step up and avail of the vaccine because actions speak louder than words. We've stepped up. We've had it. We've all had it in our practice. We believe it's safe. We believe it's the best way forward because it's what the experts in public health have advocated. And I have to keep coming back to this, Joe. We have to trust Tony Holohan and the public health experts who are working around the clock to get Ireland out of this mess and give us all a ray of hope. We all need hope, Joe, that we can get out of this. That our over 70s can be vaccinated.
People's behaviour. Sorry for cutting across. That sounds off. Sorry, Mark. I really am the way I came in there. No, but the hope is all of us social distancing and enforcement. And the other thing is the vaccine. That's why I think we're getting so many calls about the vaccine. After 11 months, people see it as the hope, and that's why they're clamouring for it.
Joe, the most vulnerable people are over 70s. Let's get them vaccinated quickly and speedily, and then they are, you know, they're not at risk of serious illness and complications. That then enables things to begin to reopen. It allows the person who's got the small business to reopen. It allows colleges to get back, schools. And everything depends on the vaccination program. This is a chink of light. We need hope. As human beings, Joe, we are forward-looking. You know, you can talk about mindful optimism, realistic optimism, however way you want to talk about it. But we all need hope for a brighter future. But it starts with today, everyone moving forward on the vaccination program, everyone encouraging, supporting each other, clarifying if people have concerns. That's what we're here for as GPs. We want to clarify any concerns people have. We want to communicate clearly, concisely, rationally, no panic. And we want everybody to work forward and move forward together for a brighter, better future for all of us. And you know, Joe, after the last year, I remember last March, Paddy's Day last year, we were all inside in our practice and the fear and not knowing what was going to happen. And people have been through so much. And I know from talking to patients every day, the COVID blues, the people are burnt out with the process. And people deserve hope. We all deserve that.
Yeah.
What's your next step in terms of the vaccination protocols, Mark? Who next week are you?
Well, I'm very privileged. I work with an amazing group of people in the Waterford Health Park. And our practice nurses have taken the lead on developing a whole kind of a procedure for how we're going to deal with our over 85s and our over 80s. So we're just waiting on supply of the vaccine. We'll be patiently waiting for the HSE to give it to us. And once it comes, we will have we will minimise the time from when it arrives in our building to the time it goes into our patients' arms. So that's what to look forward to.
Okay, that's Dr. Mark Rowe in Waterford. And Dr. Deirdre Ford in Naas. Deirdre, are you in the same situation? Are you ready to go?
We're ready to go. It's like that, as Mark was saying, we're just waiting for the actual supply of vaccine, the over 85 next week, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, we're ready to go.
Okay, thank you both. Thanks again to Maureen Lauder, who's the woman who blew the whistle on this in terms of no one in authority seemed to know about this medic. And thanks indeed, and thanks for your service, Dr. Deirdre Ford and Dr. Mark Rowe.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
If you need, I don't think anyone who's listening to Live Van and the other programs needs any more evidence of the effect of this pandemic, the horrific effect, the unprecedented effect of this pandemic. There is a book I started reading last night by a doctor in the UK. Now, she's written before. Her name is Rachel Clark, and it's called Breathtaking. You'll get it. I don't know what people's positions are now in terms of getting newspapers. It's not just breathtaking, it's jaw-dropping in terms of her description of what's happening behind. Now, I know we've seen the images tell a thousand words, but Rachel Clark, who was a doctor, her description of what COVID does in a hospital is just, and she's a fine writer, is jaw-dropping. Her book is called Breathtaking, but her revelations are jaw-dropping. Now, I'm saying, how do a doctor still decide he doesn't want to give the vaccine after evidence from all, unless there's the most incredible conspiracy that's been visited to us by a virus from Mars, where we're all deluded, all in all continents, all different persuasions, and all the scientists have got together and come up with this plan. What do they call it? What do the conspiracy theorists call it? A plandemic. Read, if you need more evidence, just read Rachel Clark's book, or you can listen to an extract from it indeed on the site I was looking at last night, which is the Amazon site. They actually play it, her reading an extract. Patricia Mills is in Ballyfermot. Patricia, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're listening to this whole debate.
Well, I didn't listen to the whole lot of it. I didn't hear the start of it, but when I did put on... You were obviously talking about Dr. Waters.
Yeah.
I don't know that man, never heard of him in my life. And he probably is a great doctor, a great GP or whatever, but he's obviously living with his head in the clouds because, as you say there's no more evidence that he could actually see or feel. Every one of us on the planet has actually been affected by COVID. And... I say let him go to court because I wouldn't say he'll win, but like that.
We wait and see. But tell us, Patricia, your family are on the front line and you've relatives in hospital.
I do, yeah. And one of my sons have got the vaccine.
Okay, great.
And my husband has got half of the vaccine. He got the first.
The first dose, okay.
And Joe, that is the hope we have, is the vaccine. Now, it might be one of many, and we haven't got enough of it. But for one second, can we just stop thinking even about Ireland? Just for one minute.
Yeah.
Because there's poorer countries than Ireland. And the poorest country is actually the Congo at the moment. They can't afford water, never mind vaccines.
Yeah.
And there's a numerous poorer countries than ourselves. And the world would not be able to exist without them.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, well, fortunate for them, Britain has a surplus of vaccines.
Well, not you know? They will have eventually, yeah. But
yeah.
But is it one of your points, Patricia, is that we should be, and I didn't detect any animus anyway in people.
When, because
the UK are doing so well on the vaccine. But we, yeah. For every extra person that's vaccinated, all of us should be glad. All of us should be glad.
All of us should be thankful, Joe. All of us should be thankful because this is like it has never happened before on this earth, do you know?
Okay, I want to stay with us, Patricia, because I want to ask you again about your relatives. Martina Bagwan is on the line. Martina, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
You say Dr. Gerard Waters in Selbridge, who is refusing to refer people for COVID tests and refusing to administer the vaccine. And he's saying that if people are stupid enough to take the vaccine, that's their own business. Your parents are on his list.
They are, yeah. I mean, he's been, I suppose, our family GP for a long, at least 40 years, I'd imagine, at this stage. He's not mine anymore, obviously. But, so my parents live in Selbridge. They're both in, you know, the over 70 age group with underlying conditions as well. So, obviously, you know, it's it's a concern. I suppose the most surprising thing is that my mum actually rang the HSE this morning and they told her they weren't aware of it, which I find very surprising given that's been on the media since your show yesterday and indeed Paul Reid dealt with it directly, I believe, on the news and on Drive Time yesterday evening. So I just think it's not a very satisfactory answer that she was told to find another GP who would give it, which, you know, sounds fine in principle, but isn't the easiest thing to do.
And Martina, were your parents aware that it might not have had to come up, or they might have had to visit him in the last year, but were your parents aware that this doctor was, one, refusing to refer people for a COVID test, and two, now is saying if anyone is stupid enough to take the vaccine, let them go elsewhere?
No,
were you aware of that?
They weren't aware about that he wasn't referring. They were aware that he had general misgivings about the situation. To be honest, I wasn't part of these conversations. So I don't want to, it's hearsay, but I know he had general misgivings. I don't know about the virus in general, but maybe about how it was being handled by the authorities. So actually I don't see my mum, you know, she's in Kildare, I'm in Wicklow, so, you know, we talk,
distance.
But... You know, any time I've spoken to her over the past couple of weeks, I've been asking her to check if he will be giving it, because I did have a suspicion that he wouldn't be, which I suppose, so your show yesterday wasn't actually much of a surprise, unfortunately.
Well, it came as a surprise to the IMO, the Irish College of General Practitioners, and above all, to the HSE, who pay this man.
And I suppose, like, whatever about being a conscientious objector, I think the minimum he could have done was inform the HSE that he wouldn't be giving it. Like, it shouldn't be up to, you know, everyone to find out on a radio show that he won't be giving it.
And, Martina, just talk us through, if your parents decided to change GP after 40 years, that's a turmoil.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just putting them in an awkward situation. I mean, you know, another local GP may do it, but I suppose, you know, they're a little bit reluctant to kind of... you know, approach them and ask them when they're not their GP. And I'm pretty sure Paul Reid said yesterday he had their details and he would be in touch, not directly, obviously, but that the HSE would be in touch with those patients. But, I mean, that's not in line with what the HSE are actually saying. So,
And the HSE says... your GP is your crucible, is your point of contact.
Yeah.
And it is the GP that will initiate the contact and phone you or text you, whatever way to say the vaccine is in, you're next Tuesday week or 2 months from Tuesday or whatever. And that's not going to happen for Mr. Waters.
I do think the least he could have done was, you know, there was a presumption there that it would be GPs who would be administering it. So the least he could have done was inform the HSE that he wouldn't be. I mean, he's objecting, but he hasn't actually. Well, I don't know. Maybe he. Maybe I can't say for sure. He hasn't. Hasn't.
Well, he's given
notified the HSE that he wasn't. But if he hasn't, he probably should have.
Yeah. But and again, you don't want to be, as Maureen Lawler, who's the woman who was speaking on behalf of his patients and the group, the cohort she's familiar with, they don't want to be upsetting their GP either. Your GP is an incredibly powerful person.
Yeah,
and that's why there's so few people in Ireland, and we presume this is also a reflection on their ability, in fairness. There's so few people in Ireland that would change their GP, and there's so few people in Ireland that would complain about their GP.
Yeah.
Now, I'm saying that's because they don't have to complain, but even if they do, it's a big, big step.
Yeah, it's a there's big a certain step. Amount of loyalty there.
Yeah,
I think.
And trust.
Exactly.
And that's what, and the other thing is, you don't want to be overly worrying people of an age group, especially in the times we're now living in, 11 months into this pandemic, and as we're discovering, it was here before last February and last January. How have your parents managed generally, Martina?
Well, I mean, my dad has been hardly out of the house since last March.
Yeah.
You know, he goes for a walk down the road, that's about it. You know, my mum hasn't seen my daughter properly in nearly a year, a few times. You know, obviously the vaccine is giving hope, so I mean this is a big setback.
Yeah. Hope. Okay, Martina, kind regards to you and your parents at these difficult times. But thankfully they're in good fettle at the minute.
They seem
to be extraordinarily vigilant, which is great.
Exactly.
Okay, that's Martina Bagwan, who's in Wicklow, and her parents are on Dr. Waters' list. Emma, good afternoon, Emma.
Good afternoon, hi.
You're a nurse, is that correct?
I am an administrative staff.
Okay, so what's happening in your practice that you're in charge of, because you are the boss, and I know that administrators and practices, I know a few.
Yeah.
They are brilliant. So tell us what's happening in your practice.
So basically, like you said, look, I work in a large GP practice here in Dublin, and there are concerns with the safety of our admin staff in particular. So our admin staff have yet to be offered the COVID-19 vaccine, even though we registered our details well over a month ago. We were told that we would be vaccinated before the vaccine rollout would start, which is this coming Monday. And this hasn't happened, and our staff are all concerned. Just to give you an idea of numbers, so currently at the moment we have over 2,500 patients, over 65s alone, that are expected to be coming into our surgery. While they have vaccinated the GPs and the practice nurses here already, they have pretty much left the admin team high and dry. Now, our admin team are not sitting in an office away from everybody. We are having dealings with these patients, and we will have dealings with them as they're coming in over the coming weeks. So it's basically, you know, we obviously want to get our vaccine, so we're obviously protecting our patients coming in, obviously protecting ourselves as well. And we're just a little concerned, you know, we haven't heard anything from the HSE as to what, when or, you know, why we haven't received our vaccinations yet.
So you don't actually have dates. You can't tell your patients time and place. You can tell them place, but you can't tell them time.
What you were saying earlier, we are just waiting for the vaccine to come into the practice. It's ordered, it's on its way. But we have 6 admin staff here that will be looking after those patients coming in, and not one of us have had our vaccine yet.
Okay, that is difficult, isn't it?
It's a very difficult one, you know. And look, our admin staff, along with every other GP practice in Ireland, have worked tirelessly to support the HSE and our patients, you know, during this. It's been an extremely difficult time. But it's unfair to expect practices to offer this rollout without ensuring that every member of staff that will be dealing with these patients coming in are vaccinated or somewhat protected.
And in terms of that plea, as I hear it, Emma, has it been addressed? Have you been told?
It's basically just been a waiting game. All we've been told by the HSE so far has been it's been next week. You know, you might ask, well, why can't our own GPs and nurses give it to us while it comes here? They've been told specifically they are not to administer any vaccines to any staff members that any vaccine coming through the door here is for obviously patients in their course. Yeah. So it's, and I'm sure we're not the other practice. We're not the only practice that's probably having similar issues with the rest of their staff not being vaccinated. But, you know, admin staff, you know, they're invaluable. You know, we're the first people coming in the door. Yeah. And, like, I mean, we have taken every precaution to ensure, you know, peace of mind for anybody who has to come down. PPE, wearing masks, everything. We've gone to extreme lengths, I'm sure, as everybody else has. But, you know, I don't think, you know, asking for a vaccine is as much ask for, you know.
Okay. And are you on the understanding that the rollout will start on Monday?
We are of the understanding it was starting next week. Now, we are waiting for our vaccination, the actual vaccination.
It's now Friday afternoon.
It's a bit tight. It's a bit tight. So I'd be surprised, but it's still not giving us an awful lot of time, especially if we were to get two vaccinations.
But if you got a call this afternoon or an email saying you have X amount of vaccines arriving at 9 o'clock on Monday morning, have you got the facility to contact people between now and then in terms of emails, texts?
Yeah.
You have. Good.
Yeah, we have all that set up. Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well done. But I do take your point that surely there's an argument that the staff in a practice should be getting the vaccine first. I don't think anyone would begrudge that. Okay, Emma, thanks indeed, and thanks for your service. I want to go to Dr. Amy Morgan, mainly because you've been holding so long, and I apologise. I'm conscious of your work. You're a GP in Drogheda. What's happening in your rollout scenario, Amy?
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Good,
so, we have started to contact our patients who are eligible to receive the vaccination, and we are primarily going by the allocation of age. So in terms of our cohort of patients that are over 70 years of age, and we are starting with those who are over 85 years of age first. So our practice team, and I think it's been alluded to there as well, they have been invaluable to us. They have been working so hard. And our practice nurse has been contacting the patients, ringing them up, saying, listen, we are trying to get our numbers together. Are you interested in taking the vaccine? And usually, actually, overwhelmingly, the answer, thankfully, has been, yes, when do you want me to come down? So it's been very positive so far. So we have logistics for that side of things set up. So we really just, it's about getting a sense of the numbers, because there is a certain amount of, there's a threshold for the numbers that you can order the vaccine for. And have to be planned for. And obviously, you know, as has been discussed before, this vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, is fiddly. And we need to know the specifics of the exact delivery date so that we're set up and we're ready to go. But once we know our date, we will be ready to go.
And you, what I'm getting from you as well, Amy, is that the logistics of it have to be quite precise.
Extremely precise, yeah. So we need to know the exact amount of people who are going to be here with us on the day. They need to know that it's going to be strictly a vaccine appointment. It's going to be 15 minutes. They have to be ready to come in. There's an allocated time slot. And when that vaccine delivery arrives to our surgery, we're on the clock. So there's a specific amount of time can elapse before we receive the vaccine and then get it into arms. So it's specific, but we've had good training around it, so we know what we're meant to do. And it's obviously very important that we reassure our patients that when they come to the surgery, that they're going to be dealt with in an efficient manner, that it's going to be safe, that they're going to be socially distanced, etc. So we're ready to move forward.
Okay. That's Dr. Amy Morgan, GP in Drogheda, the Brian Sound Medical Centre. Thanks, Amy. 51551, my friend.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Joe at RT.ie. And back to the logistics of the rollout and how it's going to happen and what information GPs have got. Dr. Nina Burns, you all know Nina from radio and television appearances. Nina, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And where have you, just take us through how you as a GP, Nina, how have you been told about the rollout?
So there were two very good webinars this week that most GPs attended. So one was run by the IMO, who negotiated the deal and the rollout of the vaccination.
Okay.
And then the second one was with the ICGP, and they had an excellent webinar on Wednesday. So that's really where we got our information.
And what was that webinar consist of? What did it consist of?
So it, it was sort of the logistics, and then also on the ITGP when there was specific training about the administration, because as Dr. Morgan mentioned, the Pfizer vaccine particularly is quite fiddly, and there's a very specific way it has to be prepared.
It's quite precious.
Yes, it is. I mean, it has to be kind of gently shaken, not shaken too much, not put on its side. There's a dilution and withdrawal. But there are all things that we can do. We're well used to dealing with fiddly medicines, so it's not an issue. It's just knowing how to do it. So I suppose the great thing is that the vaccine is coming. It's going to over 85 first. And I think maybe that message isn't strong enough that, you know, we're talking about the over 70s. I don't want people who are just over 70 to be disappointed in the next week or so, because next week it will be over 85s, and actually only a very limited number of practices are getting it next week.
Okay.
It is going to get to everyone, but it's just not all going to happen next week.
Well, I think one of the disappointing things that people gradually dripped over the last few days, it sounded like anyway, is that the over 70s now, it won't be until mid-May until they're completed, which is...
That's the second dose. Yeah, so we're starting with over 85s, then over 80s, then over 75s, then over 70s. Right. But it's even a bit more complicated than that, because only 84 practices next week will get vaccines for their over 85s. And then it'll be the week after some more practices and the week after some of that. So actually, some of the 85s will only get their first dose 3 weeks from now. And then it'll be every 2 week tranche you'll go to your basically your 80s, your 75s and your 70s.
Mm.
So it will take time, but we will get there. And you know, and so I think, as Dr. Morgan said, as soon as that vaccine hits the surgery, we're on the clock and we're dying to get it into people's arms. So we'll be giving it as soon as it arrives, you know.
And the webinar was run by the IMO.
Yeah, so the first webinar, the IMO had negotiated the deal with the HSE. So, I mean, I'm actually not a member of the IMO, but they invited non-members to watch the webinar as well. So they always negotiate these deals. Even though GPs are individual contractors, the IMO is the body with which the government negotiates. So they had the information. Now, to be fair, you know, I want to give credit where credit is due. I think the HSC and the IMO, they did a lot of work in a week. This is a big turnaround. We all thought we were getting the AstraZeneca, so they had a lot of work to do. Look, it's a bit frustrating for those of us who thought we were just going to get some vaccines and be able to give them to our 85s, 80s, 75s, 70s as quickly as possible. I don't think my practice will get any vaccines for at least 2 weeks. And I suppose it'll be hard for people who are over 85 who know that their friends who go to practice A down the road have got vaccinated and they're still waiting. But we are ready. As soon as the vaccines hit, my admin team and especially my manager, I have to give her credit. She has done Trojan work getting everything ready for this. And unfortunately, she's actually the only member of my team who hasn't been called for a vaccination yet. Yeah. So my heart is bleeding for her. Everyone else is getting them on Sunday, but somehow she hasn't been called.
And that's the worry. Now, that Emma, an administrator in a very big practice, pointed out as well that they're the administrators.
No, we're very lucky. All our team have got an invite for a clinic on Sunday, except for actually one doctor and my manager. And we're really hopeful that they might still get called, you know, and if there are short-term, like short-notice vaccines available, they'd be really happy to go there. But they will all be vaccinated. And look, we're just dying to start giving them, Joe. I think GPs are just so looking forward to vaccinating people, and we just want the vaccines in the practice ready to go as quickly as it possibly can.
Okay, but you're saying it's coming down from the GP perspective. I know nursing homes were done, and I presume it was regardless of who, the age criteria.
Yeah, no, it didn't matter. Once you were nursing home resident, you got vaccinated.
But now it's age tranches.
Yeah, and it's important that people don't feel that somehow they're being left behind. It's being done very specifically. And, you know, I think pretty much every practice across the country is ready to go, and we have our lists ready.
Like
we have reserve lists ready.
Yeah.
The GPs are pretty organised.
I'm getting that message loud and clear from the programme today. And it's really impressive. Really impressive. And the key now is the supply.
It is. It's the supply.
Okay.
And we will get it in. We'll do weekend clinics if we have to.
Yeah,
Looking at the way we're getting, it looks like we'll be vaccinating Easter weekend. But we will do that. And we just want to get people vaccinated.
It's probably one of the mistakes that was made at Christmas that people regarded. Anyway, that. This thing that we had to be open for Christmas, we had to be able to say, there's no had to anymore. Had to and have to at this stage is suppress this virus. So days and times, like last Saturday in Scotland alone, they vaccinated 58,000 people in one day last Saturday in Scotland. But anyway, Dr.
Nina, I think we can do it. I think
That's the message I'm getting.
And I agree with you, Joe. I think hopefully we don't look for a meaningful summer. We learned from our meaningful Christmas. I think the important thing is we push this virus back and open up carefully as we do.
The only thing meaningful in at the moment is life. Thanks indeed, Dr. Nina. Thank you for your service. Veronica Cleary, I mentioned there tranches, and Nina mentioned tranches, age tranches, and I mentioned nursing homes and the fact that I presumed everyone in nursing homes got vaccinated regardless of their age. But you say there is a significant loophole, Veronica. Do you want to tell us what it is?
Yes, Joe, and thank you very much for having me on. Joe, my sister, she's an adult. She has an intellectual disability and she lives in a HSE long-term care facility, what's called a community group home. What that means is that they live in an ordinary house on an ordinary housing estate in a group, usually 4 to 6. In my sister's house, there are 4, but they're living out in the community.
Okay.
But it is HSE managed and run, and if the HSE defines these houses as long-term care facilities. So the residents, the house mothers and the families, we have been following the same protocols as nursing homes during the pandemic. For example, we have the same visitor restrictions throughout the various lockdowns as the nursing homes. And the residents also meet the priorities vaccination criteria for nursing homes because they are highly vulnerable population. Many of them have underlying medical conditions that put them at high risk of COVID infection. And on that basis, our family presumed that these residents and their house mothers would be given the same priority as nursing homes for vaccination, but that is not the case. Basically, what happened, the HSE sent an update letter to families in January saying that only residents over 65 would be vaccinated initially, and there was no mention of when the house mothers would be vaccinated. And in my sister's house, out of 4 residents, there is only one person who's over 65 years of age. So I wrote back to the HSE asking why age was the only criterion, since we're considered a long-term care facility.
Okay.
And why there was no mention of when staff would be vaccinated. Now, the house mothers are wonderful and they've been extremely vigilant and they are making massive personal sacrifices to keep the residents safe. Sorry, Joe, but it's quite emotional because the sacrifices they and the residents are making are unbelievable. Anyway, so the house mothers are the potential key point of entry for COVID infection because they go home to their families and they have to go to the supermarket, etc., etc. So the HSE wrote back on the 1st of February to say that all staff would be vaccinated by the end of March. Now, that's 6 weeks away from now, and that the rollout to other residents would happen over the next number of months, and they gave no indication of specific timelines. We're very concerned because using age as a criterion is piecemeal. It might give protection to that cohort, but it doesn't protect the other residents in the house. Also, the residents do everything as a group because of their intellectual disability. So the vaccinated resident is still going to be as restricted as the others in the house until they're all vaccinated, and that could take several months. The staff are the potential key risk factor, as I said before, because they have to leave the house to go home and to go shopping.
But in terms of the HSE, treat it in every other aspect as a long-term residential unit.
Exactly.
So just to go back through the through the lockdown, your sister's facility where she's living with her friends and colleagues, they had to abide by the nursing home regulations.
Absolutely. And so had we. We were allowed hall door visits.
Yeah,
visits
or whatever.
Lockdown, exactly. And then eventually we were allowed in for a half an hour. I was allowed to bring her out once for coffee. That's 4 visits since March 2020. And really, also what people don't understand about people with intellectual disabilities, Joe, people in nursing homes often are receiving end-of-life care. But the residents, the people with intellectual disabilities in these residences, they're full of life.
Yeah,
but they can't get back to their lives until they're vaccinated. And since March 2020, my sister's life outside her house has come to a full stop. Basically, since March, her centre has been closed, her evening social programme is gone, her Special Olympics are gone, her twice weekly work experience in a local hotel is gone. She has not been allowed to come up to us in Dublin.
Yeah.
And their daily routine now is limited to whatever activities the house mothers can think of to vary their day within the house. And that's really challenging for both the staff and the residents. And Joe, you and I can distract ourselves in ways that they cannot. They're not able to go out on their own for a walk.
Yeah.
They can't go off for a takeaway coffee. And depending on their level of intellectual disability, they mightn't be able to read, to watch TV, Netflix, use WhatsApp, Zoom their friends, all the usual things that we would do. So, as you can imagine, the day is very long, and it's not good for their psychological or physical well-being.
Of course it's not.
And what the HSE need to do, they need to join the dots in relation to vaccines for those with intellectual disabilities in their long-term care facilities. The approach needs to be integrated, as it is for nursing homes, offering vaccination to all residents and staff on site. And there is no sign that that thinking has happened. And basically, it's not right that it hasn't, because the sooner that these, all of these, as a group and as units, get their vaccinations, the more chance of them getting back to their former lives sooner rather than later.
And the irony, Veronica, is that there has been, rightly so, and well proven, and over the last few decades, that we should, that as a society, and I include your sister in this as well, and everyone living there, that we as a society should move to those smaller units.
Exactly, and that's actually what HICWA have recommended, and the HSE are doing it. And I have to say, really, Joe, the HSE, they get a lot of flack for various things, and I'm giving out to them about this now. But that model and those house mothers and their managers, they are incredible. They are superb. They are a flagship model for the HSE, and we should all be very proud of them. So I cannot understand why at national level, when they are so sensitive in terms of now the model they are using, why they cannot understand the risk physically, psychologically and emotionally that these group of people are. And they are a silent minority. They cannot speak for themselves, Joe.
Did you get a response, Veronica, to such an articulate and detailed argument?
Well, the only response I got was that the commencement has started to all residents over 65 years of age, and that the rest of the residents, that the rollout will happen over the next number of months.
And
that doesn't tell us anything.
Yeah, I know, and we're back to supply again. That's the...
We are. But at the same time, I have a friend who lives in Jersey, and her granddaughter is autistic, and her parents are being done at the same time as her daughter because of the fact that she is autistic. And I mean, I've heard other carers talking about this as well. This is a very specific group of people, as you know, Joe.
Yeah.
They have very, the limitations on their life in general are unkind. And the best way we can give them a quality of life is to have them back to where they belong, with their peers, with their centres, their social programmes, because they cannot distract themselves the way you or I can, even within the limitations of what we have to tolerate now.
Okay.
And I don't know why, if we are being considered, if they are being considered a long-term care facility by the HSE, we presumed that they would be in the first part of the framework, like the nursing homes. And also the house mothers. At the moment, the house mothers, the way it works, they come in, say they come in on shift, one of them would come in on shift at lunchtime. She will spend the whole day and she will sleep overnight. They are wearing masks at the moment. They're getting their temperature taken to try to protect the residents, because they're very acutely aware of how they could be bringing in infection. But they have to take their masks off to eat with the residents. They have to take their masks off to have a cup of tea. So with the best will in the world, they are at risk of bringing in infection. And I cannot imagine what self-isolation would be like for somebody with an intellectual disability. Can you? I don't even want to go there, Joe. Somebody being isolated in their own room and not to be able to pass the time doing all the things that we could do, and also not understanding why they have to be in self-isolation. So the only way to stop that happening is to get them vaccinated and get their house mothers vaccinated as soon as possible, as a priority group, as the nursing home. Because, as I say, I unfortunately, often nursing home residents are at end of life, but these people are full of life. And at the moment, their lives are far more seriously curtailed than yours or mine.
Okay. Veronica, if you permit me, I've met your sister. And full of life is an understatement now, Veronica.
Exactly, exactly.
She is the essence of life.
She is, and she's a Special Olympic gold medalist and a bronze medalist.
Which she'd never tell you about, she's so modest.
That's right. And she's listening now, George.
Yeah, I know. And hello, honey, it's great. We'll see you soon, as we always do. And you have a great advocate in your sister and your family and yourself. I won't call out your name. Okay, Veronica Cleary. Guru Mila Mahakad, Veronica. Thank you very much for that message.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Joe at RT.ie. Maura Kyo, I'm sorry for holding you again. Maura, obviously there's going to be comparisons with ourselves and our nearest neighbour, but you have practical comparisons about the rollout of the vaccine. Your sister, for example, is an optician.
Yes, she's done in Scotland. Joe, my son is a teacher in Cheshire. He's done. Mm. My sister, 64-year-old sister in London, is done. And she has COPD, but I mean, many people have got that, and she's done. And I just think we're being sold up the river without a paddle from the HSE. Do you know what? I think the HSE are hoodwinking us. I really do. I'm so annoyed.
See, I'm uncomfortable with that because the HSE would say that that we don't have to supply, and supply is down to the government.
But even the
government have made the decision that we're in this with the EU, and we're not deviating from that, and we get one, I think it's 1.1%, which is the proportion of the population we represent in the EU. We get 1.1% of whatever the EU buy, and the EU have made I think they admitted themselves. Ursula von der Leyen admits it, that she did it the same when she was Minister for Defence in Germany. That a mess has been made of procurement.
Yeah, well, this is it. But why are we the ones to suffer from it? You know, and the HSE, again, I'm saying, is it not true that we pay the HSE hundreds and hundreds of millions of euros and pounds back in the day to sort out our health system for us? And, you know, my mother is 17 years dead on Tuesday. And 17 years ago, we had to go to look, there wasn't even a trolley to put her on. It was the things that they were putting the dead people on. We had to try and get one of them for her. So this should have been sorted. The billions and billions and billions have been spent. They could have built a COVID hospital in each province for it. You know, I really and truly think the HSE are getting away with more. You know, after listening there...
Maura, sorry, I'm just saying, are you a patient of Dr. Waters?
I am a patient of Dr. Waters, yes.
You won't be getting the vaccine off him.
No, I won't. But I'll tell you, Joe, Jerry Waters, I don't agree with what's going on now, what he's doing. But he saved my husband's life. My husband is immunosuppressed. He saved a neighbour's child's life that was diagnosed. He diagnosed it with meningitis going back 20 years ago.
Great.
So he's done a lot of good.
As GPs do. But if you're, rightly so, Maura, and I see your earlier point is your husband is out of work since last March because he's immunocompromised. But your GP, whether you like it or not, your GP has said, if you are stupid enough, that's what he said, if you are stupid enough to take the vaccine, well, that's your business. Are you stupid, Maura?
I'm not stupid.
Is your husband stupid?
My husband is not stupid, but I have to respect Dr. Orr because he's been.
I'm sure he saved lives as most of the 3,000 GPs in the country have. But anyone who called me stupid because I was going to take a vaccine that's recognised, validated, verified, hundreds of millions of people have already got it around the world. Anyone who called me stupid, I would be out of that office in jig time. Anyway, thanks indeed, Maura. Nuala Acton, Nuala. Have I one more break or two more breaks? One. We'll take it now. 51551. Stupid.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Nuala Acton, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Your husband was with Dr. Waters for 50 years, so he's a long time practicing.
That's right. And
what happened?
Well, we went to see him in December. Ivan was having just a blood pressure check. So he had his blood pressure done, and then I was accompanying him in the room. And then Jerry said, you'll notice I'm not wearing a mask.
This is Jerry, the doctor. Dr. Jerry.
Correct. Yeah, Dr. Okay. Jerry Waters.
Yeah.
You'll notice I'm not wearing a mask. He said, this COVID thing is all over, completely overrated. All it is a bad flu. And then when we went home... Yeah,
so, him not wearing a mask, he pointed that out to you, was a badge of honour, was it?
Something like that. Because it's nothing to worry about. We were both wearing masks, luckily. But when I left afterwards, I thought, jeepers, I mean, we were in a hazardous situation there with somebody not wearing a mask. And he had to be quite close to Ivan because he was taking his blood pressure. So I was surprised that sort of thing hadn't come out in the calls that you got.
Well, it's coming out now. You were saying last December, which is six weeks ago.
Well, the 16th of December,
Okay.
Yeah.
At that stage, now it's got worse, as you know, since. But at
much worse.
At that stage, there was, I think, anyway, there was nearly 200,000 cases. 3,000 deaths. It's gone up since then. You were saying the doctor, unprompted, said to you, oh, by the way, you see, I'm not wearing a mask. How close was he to you?
He was in the same room. Well, he was in the same room with me.
Was the room open? Was it cold or warm?
Well, the door was open. The door of the room was open. But, of course, he was very close to Ivan because he was taking his blood pressure.
How long were you with him for?
Oh, about 20 minutes, I suppose. We survived.
So if I know you did, thankfully, and you will. But it wasn't specific to you, his boasting about not wearing a mask. He obviously doesn't wear a mask for every patient or any patient.
He's still not wearing a mask, I gather. Now, Ivan is a survivor of COVID. When he was in Blanchardstown following breaking his neck this time last year, he was in Blanchardstown, and he contracted COVID in there. Now, they looked after them extremely well, and he has survived. I'm not sure. He could have a bit of long COVID. I'm not too sure.
And Nuala, and I don't, first of all, I'm very conscious that anyone that goes into a doctor's surgery, you were automatically on the back step because you're the one that's going in looking for help. Obviously, that's why you're there. But were you tempted to say to him, I'd love to know what his tone was, but the words say enough. He said, you will notice I'm not wearing a mask. This COVID is overrated. It's only a bad flu. And as one of our callers pointed out the other day who had it, comparing flu to COVID is like comparing your kitten in your house to a tiger in the zoo. That's the difference. Yeah. Now, were you tempted to check him?
Well, Joe, I have an adage. I don't believe in getting involved in arguments that I have no hope of winning.
Well done.
So there's no point in arguing.
And have you any worry about saying this publicly about him now?
Well, no. When we didn't hear anything about Ivan will be 90 shortly. Mm. We didn't hear anything about his vaccine when I rang the other day.
Well, you won't be hearing from Dr. Walker.
I rang to find out, are you calling us or are we calling you?
Yeah.
And his charming secretary, Linda, said, no, I'm sorry to tell you. So now we are trying to find another GP where he'd be able to get it. I'm sure he'll be able to get the vaccine.
Well, you better. But remember, one of his other patients rang the HSE this morning on foot of the HSE statement saying, ring us and we'll sort you out. And they hadn't a clue what they were talking about. They say they were totally unaware. This is the helpline. I know this is a big organisation. But anyway, what are you going to do? Oh, I'm over time. Nuala, stay safe.
Okay,
and I should have been talking more about your husband. Has he recovered from falling down the stairs? How did he break his neck?
He has. Now, sometimes he gets gets a bit cross. He's actually calling me at the moment.
Okay.
I hope you can't hear him.
You're as care as well.
I have to leave. I have to leave.
Okay, and so have I. Okay, Nuala, you stay safe, Nuala, and get the vaccine as soon as you can. Thanks.
I will, of course, Joe. Don't worry. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks indeed. Annette Egan produced, Niamh Dunn on research, Mark McGrath on sound, Maeve Muniz, the BCO, Rebecca Means, the series producer, Ray Darcy.